Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Today on Open Loops, we have someone I am very excited to bring on, Mohammed Ibrahim. He is a tour guide of Egypt, but he's not just a tour guide. I mean, this is a guy who is really, he's a historian, a scholar, a passer down of ancient knowledge, wrote a book called Egypt Before the Written History, The Lost Knowledge of Ancient Egypt. He has been involved with a lot of great people that this show has crossed paths with. He leads tours that are focused on showing these hidden aspects of a culture that, prehistoric Egypt and whatnot is something that draws many people. There's a mystical thing about it. People are drawn to it. People feel, for some reason, everybody claims that they were an Egyptian priestess or something when they do past lives. I mean, it's all very interesting, and I'm very curious to talk about the science, the mythology, what's real, what's not, and get his perspective. Mohammed, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Greg. The pleasure is mine. I'm happy to join this podcast.
Absolutely, my friend. You're from there originally? You're from Egypt? Or how did you get to a point where you dedicated your life to this?
That is a good question. Yes, I'm Egyptian, from an Egyptian family, like thousands of years. But not only Egyptian, but I was born in a city called Memphis, Egypt, the original Memphis, not Memphis, Tennessee. Okay.
Yes, yes.
Memphis, Egypt was the capital of Egypt at almost 3000 BC. So my little town was part of a big area, includes Saqqara, Dahshur, Abu Sir, Abu Jarab. These are all famous sites in the Egyptian history, and each site includes hundreds of monuments, like pyramids, tombs, underground tunnels. So I grew up in this area, which was full of history. So that was the beginning of my passion about ancient Egypt, because I grew up in this place. My family house was like 5 miles away, okay, from Saqqara Pyramid. And they used to take us, my school, they used to take us to school trips to these sites almost every week or every 2 weeks. So when I was like 10 years old, I started to have my first contact with Saqqara, especially Saqqara, and later Dahshur, and then Giza Pyramids. So because of these school trips, I became very interested in the ancient Egyptian history.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's so much of it. And look, I mean, I think it's interesting that there are some people, I mean, there's a lot of people that call themselves Egyptologists. There are a lot of historians of Egypt in the world. I mean, obviously, as I guess any area that has some ancient significance. But what I find particularly interesting is that you, Muhammad, have a lot of people that reach out to you to give tours that are very much connected to the spiritual realm. Very much they, like I was saying before, they're people that have a curiosity about the magical aspect of Egypt, the supernatural, if there's that, the mysterious. I mean, was that something that drew you, or were you more so studying like a more mainstream archaeological Egypt before you got into that? How did that fit into your life?
Okay. The story is I was studying and I graduated as a normal mainstream student and graduate. And when I started to join the field, I was not exactly the same. I had so many questions and I was not okay with so many of the stories. But my studies, my professors, all of them, all the books I used to have, all are mainstream stories, okay? But as I told you, because I have this kind of passion, and what I figured out later, it was not only passion, but as if there was a kind of activation was happening to me, but I didn't pay attention to this when I was young, when I was in high school, and when I was in university. Because I live so close to the place, and I started to study the history of ancient Egypt with love, with passion. And this is one of the main reasons that I'm different from the other mainstream guides or Egyptologists, is to love what you do. So I started with many questions, but I didn't find these answers in history books. So I can say I was lucky, or very lucky, because later I was started to work with some people, I can call them speakers or experts in different fields, like engineers, like physicists, geophysicists, astronomers, mathematicians, and so many other different types, geologists. And they gave me great knowledge about what they know about ancient Egypt from their own perspectives, from their own experience, and from also their scientific point of view. So that made me say, okay, it is not right to study ancient Egypt from the history point of view only. It is not fair. We must bring to the table so many other kind of science, like geology, like engineering, mathematics. I started to understand that ancient Egypt is not only a big picture for just pyramids or tombs or like constructions in general. No, there was great civilization. There were advanced technologies in ancient Egypt, spiritual aspects, philosophy. So every time I do a tour, I learn a lot from, of course, the speaker we bring to the tour, and also from the interested clients themselves. Okay. So I can tell you, yes, by time I started to lead a different way and become a very good alternative source for the seekers of this kind of stories and the people who want to know more about ancient Egypt.
Yeah. Do you feel that you have, I mean, Muhammad, I gotta ask, you've been doing these tours for a while. Do you feel like, how close are you to answers, do you feel? Any answers?
Okay, this is not fair.
I know, that's a tough question. Tough question. Tough question. I know.
I can tell you, yes, I found so many answers. But and at the same time, I found also so many questions. So I started with, let's say, 10, 15 questions. I found the answers of 12, but I found like 30 more questions. But I am still learning. I'm still searching. But it is like a huge puzzle. And myself and some of my colleagues and some of my friends all over the world, we are putting together these pieces of the puzzle. So we have now a very good sense of the picture, of the big picture. Yes, it's not complete, but I can say we have like 75% of the picture is clear.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is when you go to your main website, and if you want to book a tour directly with Muhammad, and I imagine maybe it is just you doing all these tours. It looks like you're just doing tours all the time. If you go to sabatours.com, there are classical tours, but then you start getting into techno-spiritual Egypt tours. And I'm going, what in the – like, do people – are there people that – can't decide which tour, but all of a sudden they're looking at your website and go, wait a minute, what is this other secret part of Egypt that this tour sounds more interesting? I mean, I imagine, Muhammad, you must be opening some people's eyes that probably didn't even realize how special this place is.
Exactly. Look, what I love about these tours that we don't guide our participants. Like when you visit Rome or Greece or any other place, or even when you come to do a regular tour in Egypt, you will always be listening to the guide, and you go at night to the hotel, sleep. The next day you do the same thing. No, this is not what I want to do. What I'm doing, and I love doing this, is to give the style to teach our clients. Of course, we tell them stories, but we tell them stories with so many evidence, and we tell them what we see, how we built our opinion, based on what. We tell them when we saw this, and when we saw that, and when you are going to see these colors, these edges, these corners, it means this and this and this. So my point is, later you will find my clients themselves. During some days, they come to me and tell me, Muhammad, we found something. We saw something special. We saw something weird. They learn and they got the idea what they are looking at. Okay, so they are not just a bunch of people wandering around and enjoying the view. No, we teach them how to see the site and how to see the details of the site. Plus, we take them to special locations inside many of these sites. Like when you go to Saqqara, there is a famous Serapium, the underground tunnel. Some of these sites are open to the public visitors, but it is not well known for most of the guides. And some of the other sites are closed to the public visit. But my tours includes two or three sites of these. We do what we call it private permission. It's a permission to allow us to go inside these sites, only our groups, nobody else. And this is a way to show them and to make them feel the real energy of the site without the crowd, without the energy of 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000 people around. And the famous thing we do is visiting the Great Pyramid from inside after 5 p.m. for 2 hours. So this is...
Oh, what happens there?
Look, in the public visit, the pyramid is open, but you will not be able to stay there more than 20 minutes. In private visit, we stay 2 hours. But as I said, nobody else is there. No vendors, no security, no other groups, only our group. And we are able to open the three rooms inside the pyramid. Actually, two are inside the pyramid. One is under the pyramid, 85 meters under the bedrock. This wow. is the most mystical part. And there you feel that you are truly in one of the movies of Indiana Jones. 85
oh, yes.
under the pyramid. Look, I cannot explain to you what is the feeling there because you must come and feel it yourself. But what I can tell you that everybody loved it. Everybody. I'm doing this for 20 years. Everybody, all my tours, all my clients, they all say that this last visit is the best.
Wow. It makes me wonder about, I mean, look, maybe I'm just an optimist, I guess that's not even the right word. I'm optimistic about the impossible. And, you know, there are a lot of people, Muhammad, that claim that there, I mean, one of the tours I know you do is Stargates of Ancient Egypt. I mean, there are people now that claim that we could reactivate the stargates if we all just shifted our consciousness a certain way. There are people that claim there are still places on Earth, sometimes near Egypt, but all over the world, really, where there are these portals of energy that could open up to literal portals. I think one of the ideas, and I would love for you to kind of either tell me this is completely bogus or tell me that this maybe there's something here, is that, you know, the Egyptians, for some reason, were very tuned into this. They understood this. They understood these highly spiritual things. I mean, the origin of Hermetic magic, all these things. Do you think there are areas still in Egypt near the pyramids? Maybe they're sealed off. Maybe you haven't discovered them yet, where the magic is still alive but undiscovered.
Okay, let me tell you an exclusive news. I'm writing now my second book, and the name of this book is Stargates of Ancient Egypt.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I need to tell you that, and you already know, I was graduated as a mainstream Egyptologist. Okay, so that word Stargates is against what I studied. But 7 years ago, I saw that title in one of the temples. The title is a star next to a symbol gate. So no way to read it something else. It reads Stargate. And it was written in many ways. But all of them reads the same, Stargate. Later, I discovered different styles of the same word. Instead of one Stargate, I found Stars Gate and Stargates and Great Stargate. And with Mike Ricksecker, we did this tour last year, Stargates of Ancient Egypt tour, and we discovered more symbols serving the same meaning. Okay. So my point is, yes, there are so many Stargates and portals. The ancient Egyptians left so many writings about it. But unfortunately, it is not very clear because the text is not very clear, as if they used a code to write these texts. Okay, but I'm working on this, and I will share so many great information in my next book about Stargates. But there are so many in Egypt, and there are so many all over the world. And there is one in Peru. Maybe more, but I know one in particular, that one, there is a carving into the mountain, the huge black rock at the mountain. This carving for a gate, I believe this gate maybe leads to Egypt because we have the same symbol exactly in Egypt, the same shape. The Mayan,
wow.
or the Mayan left this shape in Peru.
Now, this is wild to me. I mean, where are, Is there, where in the literature, or where, I mean, how are you as a, and this is just, you know, I'm trying to speak for people out there that might be skeptics. I mean, and sometimes I'm just a little wondering where things like this are supported. But, you know, based on this knowledge that you have, this pre-written knowledge, where is it? What do you have that lets you know that, hey, look, there is actually, these are stargates. These are portals that can be activated. This is how they work. I mean, I suppose I've always wondered how to, because a lot of people look at things ancient. There are a lot of, I mean, I know there's one in Iraq, right, that people talked about for years. They said was a portal there. They have images of these stargates that they say you can go to other galaxies and jump through other dimensions and stuff like that. I mean, where in, if it's not written knowledge, where in the spoken knowledge or hieroglyphs does it point to the idea that you can actually go through a stargate and get somewhere else?
That's a good question. Look, I was also very skeptic. Okay. I'm still also very skeptic. And by the way, I know so many information, but I don't share this information because I still don't have the physical evidence about it. But my own opinion, my own feeling says, yes, this information are true, but I don't share because when I go in a debate or a conversation, I need physical evidence. But when it comes about stargates and lost technologies and other information, why I'm writing these books, okay, and why I'm so confident? Because one of my talents, I can read hieroglyphics in a very good way. Okay. And by the way, this is not part of, this was like a minor study of all Egyptologists. So Egyptologists not necessarily can read hieroglyphics in a good way, unless they do this as separate study, because it is a huge study. So I studied the ancient Egyptian language in a very good way. And because I was very good in the Egyptian, the Arabic grammar, I became very good in the ancient Egyptian grammar because they are almost the same style. Because this language is very difficult language. Okay, but as they say, you see what you know. So because I didn't pay attention to that subject in the early beginning, so it didn't drag my attention until I started to see the first symbol I told you about, the symbol Stargate. By the way, that was in Abydos Temple, the temple of Seti first. Okay. So I started to look around the symbol to the accompanied text, and I started to check all the other writings on the other walls. And I started to read more descriptions from the ancient Egyptian writings about it. So I became very confident about what I'm saying, because when I say stargates, it is not just a title popped out from nowhere. No, the ancient Egyptians left a great knowledge about the stars and about constellations, about the space and the cosmos. So this wealth of knowledge about the stars led me to say these people must have a way to travel to the stars, because they explained so many things we didn't know anything about it until recent years. Some constellations, okay, like the Cassiopeia, that is a very far constellation. Okay, the Greeks are the very people who started to talk about it. But it happened that when you read the Egyptian text in a very good way, you will understand that the Egyptians wrote about it before the Greeks. And some constellations, you need telescopes, you need technology to see them. How did the ancient Egyptians wrote about them and included them in so many texts? Okay. So I'm talking about two kinds of portals and stargates. one can take you from Earth, from a place on Earth to another place on Earth. Okay? And one can take you from Earth outside to outside Earth. But by the way, there are many. There are not just one going from this point one to point two. No, there are so many. One can take you from one to two, from one to three, from one to eight, from one to 10, like this. There are many, many stargates.
And why? What, how do we get them back on? How do we turn them on? Is it all in our minds? Does it start with everybody meditating on Earth? I mean, what do you think?
Great. I learned it also something else from the ancient Egyptian writings and philosophy, that there is what we call it the five cycles of civilizations, five cycles of the sun, what we call it the grand year. 25,000 years and 600 or 800, okay? These cycles are beginning of civilizations and end of civilizations also, okay? So 2012 was the end of cycle number five, was the end of the end. Okay, now we are in the beginning of cycle number one. So remember when the Mayans said 2012 at the end of the world? No, it was not the end of days. It was the end of the cycle. That cycle, cycle number five, was the cycle of darkness, cycle of Amun-Ra. Darkness, deception, misleading. Now we are in cycle number one, the beginning of light. Okay, the cycle of dawn time. This cycle and the second cycle, this cycle will make our consciousness and our abilities can see better and feel better. So that will be a reason. So to activate these ancient technologies and powers with two things, that is my own opinion, with knowledge, okay, good knowledge, and also with high consciousness. Because I think the ancient Egyptians left all the secrets for us, but with a code. This code to be deciphered needs people with two qualifications. Number one, knowledge. Number two, high consciousness. So knowledge, they can decipher the text and understand how to activate the things. High consciousness, so they can use it for good things, not for bad things, not to destroy each other. Okay, so I think this is the main way to activate is knowledge and consciousness.
How close do you think we are? You said the time is coming. I mean, we got an Earth on this planet. We got people that aren't the highest of consciousness these days, Muhammad. I don't know. Maybe we send everybody on the tour, and all of a sudden, the world gets to be a right. Better place for everybody. I don't know, but I'm nervous that the mass populace is going to hold us back from turning on these portals.
No, I can tell you my own opinion also. Like when I started this work, I had like 5% of my clients they agreed with me about this. Okay. By time, they became 7%, 10, 20, 30. Now, almost 90 to 100%. Okay? So, my observation that people are getting ready every year. They are more and more ready. And we are not only ready, but we started the process. Yes, the process is quite slow, but we are now inside the process. The process is happening. The circle is now running. Okay, I'm not sure how long it takes, but it is happening.
That's awesome. I definitely think there are a lot of things you can point to as well. I mean, obviously, the world shut down, people started to seek out more of the internet made this stuff more accessible to others. People really weren't thinking about it at the level they are now. And then people had a lot of time to think about it, and people are questioning the meaning of their lives and looking for something profound. And I think there's comfort in knowing that our elders understood something. I suppose my question is this. I mean, this could be, again, another big question for you. It might not be the easiest to answer, but what is it about Egypt? Why them? Why this group? Why did they have this knowledge? I mean, have you come to any conclusions about why this particular area of the world is the birthplace of this exquisite science and spiritual truths that they're sharing?
Yes, as if you read my mind. Look, if you visit, South America, you will find some sites, and some of them are good sites. If you visit North Africa, they do have the same, some places in Asia. In ancient Sumeria, Lebanon, Greece, ancient China, ancient India, even Cambodia and some of the Asian countries. But the majority are in Egypt, okay? As if Egypt was the engine and the mastermind. Here in Egypt, the locals, when they talk about Egypt, we say Egypt is Umm al-Dunya, okay? The word Umm means mother. Al-Dunya means the world, as if they say Egypt is the mother of the world. I have my own ideas about this meaning, and I agree it is true. The Egyptians, or let's say all the nations, one day used to live in Egypt a long time ago. And by the way, if you have the chance to read my book, you will find that I am doing a very good research about the existence of mankind in Egypt. It dates back to 2,300 years ago. 2,300 years ago. Okay. Based on flint tools, stone tools were found in Egypt, especially in Cairo. So that is a long time. So we can say we didn't find any early existence for human in anywhere else like this. Recently, they talk about Kenya. They found some evidence in Kenya about 4 million BC. Okay. So my point is all the humans used to live in Egypt together, and they immigrated out of Egypt to the north, south, east, west, and creating different civilizations and cultures in the ancient world. But when I translate this sentence again, Egypt, the mother of the world, I can do it in a little bit different way. The word Umm means mother and also center. Okay, so Egypt is the center of the world, which is true. When you look to Egypt, it is in the middle of Middle East, and almost the distance between Egypt and China is the same between Egypt and the United States. Between Egypt and South Africa, the same between Egypt and North Europe, okay? So as if we talk about the ancient one big continent, Pangaea, Egypt was the center of that continent. So if we talk about global civilization, Egypt was the center of that civilization. In another word, I can say, if we say Atlantis is true story, and I believe it was true story. So Atlantis was one of the civilizations of ancient Egypt. Not ancient Egypt, the one we know 5,000 or 7,000 years old, no. Ancient Egypt, which was existed before 10,000 BC. So I believe Atlantis was the Egyptian civilization between 20,000 to 10,000 BC. That's why we have so many existence of sites and of secrets, buildings, megalithic structures in Egypt, more than anywhere else.
Yeah, very interesting. Do you suspect that I mean, I guess it kind of goes back to the same question there, but is there, if you had a chance to dig up any area in Egypt that currently is not explored, you know, say the government said, hey, you know what, Mohammed, we like your books, we like your tours, we want you to discover something else about Egypt, something that is going to really shake up people's realities. Where would you go? What would you, would there be a tomb you would open up? Is there an area that's been unexplored that you would, you think there's some kind of hidden treasure or portal there? I mean, where is, you have free reign of all of Egypt. Where are you going?
Look, in the academic field of Egyptologists, we know, and we all share this information, that all what was found is between 25 to 35% of what we are expecting to find. So there are more than 60% still under the ground. Okay. And I'm talking about also huge structures, not tiny tombs or small designs. But if I have the chance to do this, to dig in a certain place, I will go to Sinai. Sinai is still a virgin place for Egyptologists. They didn't do much digging there. Although that Sinai was very important to the ancient Egyptians, and it was highly appreciated in all the ancient texts. But unfortunately, and maybe because of the funds, no one, or they didn't do a great survey or analysis to the layers of land or ground in Sinai. I believe that if we go to Sinai, dig there, we will find great evidence for not only regular ancient Egypt, but what I call it pre-Diluvian Egypt. We will find so many evidence of the advanced ancient Egyptians.
That is awesome. I would love that. You know, in your book, I know that, and everybody's got to check out the first book. I mean, I'm excited about the second one, the Stargates, but, again, we will link to, the great book, of course, which is Egypt Before the Written History. You talk about how you're going to answer the question about the pyramids, and everybody's asking about the pyramids. How were the pyramids built? Does it make sense? I mean, there are, and they are remarkable. Do you think that's the most interesting question about the pyramids, though? I mean, is there, to you, I'm sure you've heard all the time, who built the pyramids? How are they built? What does it work? But what do you think is even more interesting about the pyramids than that question, if there is anything more interesting?
Okay, that based on the amount of knowledge for the person who is asking the question, according to the kind of knowledge they have, and also according to their inspiration. So many people are interested on how, and recently many people are interested on why they were built, what is the function.
Yes.
Okay. To answer how, it was very difficult in the beginning and still difficult, but we started to put together so many good theories. And the famous theory, Robert Schoch and Christopher Dunn. Robert Schoch, he gave us the date or not exactly the date, but according to his analysis, that the Sphinx and it means also the Giza Plateau, okay, because they are one unit, were already there during 9700 BC. So that destroys the idea of that the pyramid being built at 2600 BC, okay? So they were already built before 9700 BC. The second enhancement by Christopher Dunn when he wrote his book, Giza Power Plant, and he's telling us that the Great Pyramid is working like a huge power plant. I agree with both of them because I met so many other people like them, and we started to talk and discuss these two theories. And I can tell you definitely yes, because many of these speakers, and I appreciate all of them, they come once a year, sometimes one every 5 years or one every 10 years. Some of them didn't visit Egypt at all, and they study from books and from documentaries, okay? But I am here every day. I visit Giza Plateau almost every week, if not twice, if not three times every week, okay? So when you have good knowledge about what you see and you have the chance to see it so many times in a short time, then you will be able to start squeezing your information to see if it is right or wrong. You will start to see more details and more secrets. And your mind, especially if you love what you're doing, and your mind will be able to do analysis almost every day. Every day you check the data and see if it is okay or no. And you put possibilities, you put ideas, and then you check them again. You see if they are right or wrong. So imagine I'm doing this now for 20 years, okay?
Yeah.
So I can tell you, yes, when we talk about the Great Pyramid and so many other sites, recently we don't talk about anything except gravity control. This is the only solution. We escaped everything on the table because all the other theories are wrong. And we have so many ways to prove it wrong. Not only us, but so many Egyptologists. Like there is what we call it the Japanese pyramid, and there is Nova pyramid. There are two teams tried to build the pyramid with the old techniques. They failed. Completely failure. Okay. Other groups tried to cut stones with the old claimed technique. They failed. Many people tried to move blocks from place to another with the old techniques. Even modern techniques, by the way. I always point at when I take my kids in a vacation and we have a drive on the highway, I tell them, look, I wave I point to a truck, big truck, moving two or three blocks, like medium size, about 10 tons maybe, or like maximum 20 ton. I tell them, see, this huge truck is moving only three blocks. And it takes like more than a day to do this, to reach the destination, day or maybe 2 days. So how come they try to convince us that the ancient Egyptians moved 2,500,000 blocks from a far place and the granite stone from Aswan to Giza Plateau in a short time? And we are talking about a massive size. Some of the pieces, some of the blocks at the Great Pyramid reaches the weight of 100 ton. 100 ton, like the big block inside the king chamber, inside the Great Pyramid. Okay? So anti-gravity control is the only solution. But what is the function of these sites? This is a very hard question, because every time we discover a function, we found that there is another one can serve, or there is another way to explain, or we found another function to the pyramid and or to the site. And we, when we try to explain the second, we found that there is number three. So as if we talk about multi-function sites, multi-layers and multi-functioning.
Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, I that is a very good point. I mean, there is, well, it's also interesting that that shape shows up all over the world, that monument from the ancient world, that pyramids keep showing up. I mean, there was this movement I think it was the 70s, right, where there was pyramid power. People were putting plants under things shaped like pyramids. You know, you'd put a pyramid over your head if you were sick and it would cause you to heal. What is that all about? Is there anything there? I know people do talk about the healing properties of the pyramids, and when people have spent time in them, you know, there have been some interesting effects. But you know, is there anything to the shape of the pyramid that we all should be paying attention to, you think?
This is true. The shape, but it is not just the shape. It must be the shape and the percentage between the height and the width and the base and the sides, okay? So you can do a pyramid at your house, but try to keep the same percentage, okay? Not to be very steep or to be very wide, okay? That will affect the function. But for sure, let me tell you this story. I went to a book fair. That was a long time ago. I was like maybe 12 or 13 years old. And I bought a book, Egyptian author, and that book was talking about the secrets of the Great Pyramid. This book was talking about miracles are happening inside the king chamber. The author was talking about many things, like what? He said that the early visitors to the pyramid, he was talking about the 18th century, 19th century, when they went inside, they found some dead cats. And when they asked the local tour guides at that time, like this cat, it looks like maybe one day she died a day before. Okay, not more than a day because still in good condition. The guides told them no. Some of these cats died like a month or 2 months ago, but still in good shape. Another story, the author stated that old shaving blades, the razors, it becomes new and sharp after 3 nights inside the pyramid. Polluted water and polluted liquids in general, but especially water, if the water includes some lead, zinc, it will be pure after 3 nights. Some of the skin problems, and if there is a cut on the skin, okay, but small cut. If the person visits the pyramid like 2-3 hours for 3 days, the cut will disappear. So many things like this were mentioned in the book. So that book dragged my attention. And when I was studying the pyramid, I mentioned this to my professor. The professor said, yes, that is maybe because of the granite, because this room is covered entirely with rose granite from Aswan. And when we say rose granite, it contains quartz, high amount of quartz, okay? But yes, this can work in any place because of the granite, but I still believe that the shape of the pyramid itself, because the ancient Egyptians, when they were talking about the word pyramid, which is Mer in ancient Egypt, M-E-R, they were talking about a huge device with great energy. That is how exactly they described that small pyramid called Ben-Ben. Okay? The small pyramid in the Egyptian language is Ben-Ben. And I learned something very interesting. Any name with two parts are the same, like Ben Ben, Sem Sem, Ep Ep, like this, it means something very important and powerful. That's why they gave it the like a double name or double title. So the story says, one of the stories of creation, it talks about the phoenix, the bird, is flying into the Ben Ben. And as soon it goes inside, a kind of huge energy or let's say it's not explosion, but something like explosion. And this will be the beginning of activation. Okay? So they try to tell us that the pyramid possesses great energy. And the word pyramid itself is Greek word. Or two words. The Greeks called this structure pyramid. fire in the middle, or energy in the middle. So as if the Greek wanted to hide the meaning of the pyramid inside this title pyramid. Okay.
That is interesting. That is very interesting. Yeah, I, you know, I mean, then this gets into the question of, you know, did they just discover this? Was there some kind of divine intelligence that interacted with them? Were there extraterrestrials that were the Egyptians? I mean, first of all, were they extraterrestrials? That's one question. But then the other question is, did some of the beings they encountered when they were going back and forth to the stars, did they give them this knowledge and say, hey, you have to build this way? You know, I'm really not sure. What do you think? I mean, if it, you know, how would a group of Egyptians know where and how to form a pyramid? Do you have any idea, or is that still a big mystery?
I do have. I told you, you read my mind. Look, I was preparing a documentary called The Story of Mankind. Okay. In this documentary, I'm going to explain my ideas about the beginning of life for our ancestors. What I believe that the first group of humans were the superhumans, were intelligent. The intelligence was like 100%. So we are not evolving. No, it is the opposite. We were born top level, the golden age. So we started our golden age. Our beginning was the golden age. But because of many disasters, some of these disasters were from Earth, like floods and Earth shifting. And some of the disasters were from the sun, solar flares and waves from the sun. So by time, our ancestors started to lose their brain powers slowly. Now we are using, or not all of us, the smartest people of us are using maximum 13% of their brain powers. 13. So 87% disappeared. 87, yes. Imagine 87. So all our inventions and all what we achieved in the 21st century because of only 13%. So my idea that these pyramids and these sites were built with the amount of knowledge they had to help them to survive when they lose more from their brain powers. They understood that it is coming, that they are not going to stay with the same level of intelligence all the time. And also they understood that they are not able to heal themselves with their brain powers after maybe another disaster, or after a certain time, or after certain cycle, one of the cycles of the sun or civilization. Okay, as if it is kind of destiny that they start from the top and they start to go down till certain level, and then we rise again, and then we go to the bottom and then to the top. Okay, so they built these structures as a kind of assistance for them, to help them to get access to some places like portals, or to get energy, or to be healing centers.
That is, I got to see this documentary. That is quite an interesting origin of species. Now I'm wondering about you and your experience with the pyramids, Muhammad. What's the most magical thing you've encountered? Is there a story, or maybe not the most magical, but have you experienced any healing? Have you seen stuff you can't explain? Have you seen a UFO fly by? I mean, what has happened for you in your time? What have you seen with your eyes?
Ah, there are so many stories. Look, I will tell you a story, but it's not mine. Okay, but I was there. I was a witness to the story. A long time ago, I had a small group, and there was a very old lady. But that is not the issue, okay? Sometimes you can have old people, but they can handle the effort, the hard work, okay? But this lady was not only old, but she had some physical issues, especially with her legs. So she was moving on a cane. So that was also fine, okay? I had some cases like this, and I try to make sure to walk slowly to avoid high steps, okay? And if there is a place not easy to go, I tell the client that it is better to stay here, bring a chair or something, okay? This lady refused to stay behind, and she insisted to join us on every side. So that was, for me, was okay. I was not surprised 100%, okay? But when we went to the Great Pyramid, that was the moment I was like, no way, this is now, I must tell her the truth that she cannot go in because it is very difficult even for young people, okay? You need some good muscles, and you need to be in good shape to go inside the pyramid, especially that tunnel 85 meters under the pyramid. Sometimes I call it the killer. It kills your energy. It drains out your power, okay? So I told the lady, that will be a great challenge for you. Please wait here. She insisted to go in. And she said, I am prepared for this moment. And she told me this literally, that I have received enough energy from the Egyptian sites, will help me to go inside. So I was telling myself, okay, Muhammad, be ready to carry the lady when you are going out. But what happened? That the lady went in all the way up and all the way down, and she was like a very young person, and as if she was trained to do this. So I was, what? How this happened? But later, when it happened to me personally, I understood. On my left leg, I have a problem with my knee. Okay. This problem, sometimes it is very hurtful. Sometimes it's fine. But of course, a case like this, it means I cannot ascend any steps. Okay. Because the pressure on your muscles, leg muscles, and the knees is more than the regular walking or even running. But guess what? Every time I do this, I feel very good for like a month or two. Every time I go inside the pyramid and I go to the far top level and I go to the bottom and come out, I don't feel any pain and I don't feel any problem. And my knee stays in a good shape for 2 months. That if I don't visit the pyramid again, if I visit the pyramid and stay outside the pyramid for 2 months, it keeps my leg in good shape for 2 months. Then I need to visit the pyramid again. Okay? So I can tell you this. I experienced the healing abilities of the Great Pyramid several times. Not only me, but so many other people. If you talk about seeing things, yes, it happened. Not only around the pyramid, but also because sometimes we visit the pyramid at night, okay? So dark skies are good location when it's something is flashing. And I can tell you also, I'm very skeptical about this. Sometimes I say maybe it is a city light, maybe it is something we don't recognize, but it was happening in certain pattern. Okay, so it was like, yes, something was there. I cannot tell you exactly what was it, but it was not something usual.
Yeah, This is okay. You're making me want to do this tour more, Muhammad. You're doing a good job here. I want to sign up for this. Yeah, this is super interesting. Also, I do want to get back to something before, you know, we end this, which is gravity control is so interesting. I mean, I don't want that to slide by. We're talking about floating things, aren't we? We're talking about levitation. I mean, I've heard, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I've heard claims that the Egyptians were using sound to make rocks float and move into position somehow. Is that what you mean by gravity control? I mean, and how do we even know that that's a possibility? I mean, what's your take?
Okay, look, I cannot tell you what was the tool they used or the system. Is there sound, magnetism, or something else? But according to the heavy blocks we have, and these blocks were already transferred from the quarry to the site, we are sure that nothing else can do this. What I'm trying to say, or what does it mean, the word nothing else? Nothing else means that no trucks can do this, no cranes can do this, no helicopters can do this. And by the way, I'm telling you this from a very scientific point of view. And I learned this from Christopher Dunn. And he told me one day, Muhammad, be careful when you say in our modern days, our technology cannot do this. So he told me, be careful when you say such a statement, okay? Because we have great technology. We can do great things. But when I tell you that we have some pieces, okay? And it is wrong to call it pieces because it's giant pieces. The heavy, the weight of these heavy pieces starts from 300 ton. We have some are 500 ton. We have some are 700 ton. And we have a statue used to be one piece of solid granite, 1,000 ton. And we have what we call it the unfinished obelisk at the quarry still there. 1,200 ton. Okay, this is a number we must stay a long time, try to figure out what does it mean, 1,200 ton? How we can carry 1,200 ton? And because they were doing this obelisk, it means they were ready to move it when it is finished. But something happened and it was not finished. Okay? 1,000 or 1,200 ton was, for our modern technology, I will not call it a challenge. No, it's an impossible job. Why I'm saying this? We were doing some enhancement and enlarging Suez Canal in order to make two ships go together in each way, okay? Because it used to be like a transition, one going north, and then the one from the south have to wait until the other one crosses certain point. But they wanted them to make the body of Suez Canal bigger. So we brought some machines, and one of these machines, because they developed the port, okay, they brought a crane, and I read this in the Egyptian news 3 years ago. And the news was saying, we brought the biggest crane in the whole world. This was a Dutch crane. The crane itself is 400 ton, and it can carry till 700 ton. This is the water crane, by the way, which is different. Water crane can carry more than land crane. So I can tell you that the land crane can carry between 100 to 200 ton. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say, our technology nowadays can carry up to 700 ton, no more. But there we have ancient pieces, 1,000 and 1,200 ton. So it means what? That our modern technology cannot carry these blocks. So the only solution is what is gravity control. By the way, so many people are saying this, and of course I agree with them, but I am saying this not because this is against science or this is logic. No, because there is some carvings in some of the Egyptian temples are talking about gravity control. The ancient Egyptians left some carvings, and I show this to my clients in my tours, that the pharaoh can levitate the whole temple. This was represented clearly in a carving, that the pharaoh or the king is doing what? Is levitating the whole temple. So the idea of levitation existed in ancient Egypt.
That's interesting. How do you differentiate between the symbolic levitation and what might actually be real levitation? Because the other thing I've heard, and I have to tell you, I mean, Muhammad, look, I didn't talk about this at all, but as a magician, I studied conjuring tricks, show magic as a kid, and I remember early on reading the history of magic, and everybody shows that picture, the hieroglyphics, the image of or the image of the cups and balls. Egyptians were doing magic tricks; they were doing sleight of hand. So you know, I mean, I think it's just interesting that there's this magic. Real magic, like levitating a temple, and then there's this kind of, I don't know, showbiz magic, this entertainment form of magic. How do you differentiate between the two? Do you think they're connected to each other? You know, why are those Egyptians so dang magical?
Okay. I will tell you also my own opinion about this. When I say true science was being practiced by the people who had the knowledge, okay? This true science changed it to become magic or to become philosophy or to become ideas or to become imaginations for the people who lost this knowledge. So philosophy or symbolism, in my own opinion, based on something true. But we don't know this because we lost the knowledge. So one day, the scientist was practicing his science. In another day, this scientist became a magician. And he was doing magic. That is for the locals. The locals, imagine yourself, if you go back to, let's say, 400 AD. Okay, and you have a lighter, very simple lighter in your hand. They will call you magician, right?
Yes.
But the lighter is not magic. It is science. Okay, it was made by someone who had knowledge about doing the spark with gas. Okay, so I don't differentiate between them. I differentiate between the time and the original time or the time of knowledge and the time of ignorance. Okay, but for me, they are the same thing, but with two different labels. So anything was depicted on the walls of the Egyptian temples had a meaning. But sometimes, I agree with you, sometimes it was depicted as a symbol, but based on ancient knowledge. It was not just crazy imagination. No, it was something based on ancient story. And the king or even the priest, he wanted to take the privilege of claiming this. Like I will give you another example. And this is the most famous story around the pyramid. The pyramid is a tomb. They all talk about this. The pyramid is a tomb. And all the people like me, they deny. They say, no, this is not correct. Now I say, no, come on, people. Yes, the pyramid one day was used as a tomb. It was not designed to become a tomb, but it was reused as a tomb. So here is the question. Why they used the pyramid as a tomb? Because they understood that the pyramid has healing energy. So they were aiming that the king or any person will be buried inside, maybe can come back to life. or if the pyramid is a portal, like other people believe, that the spirit or the body of this deceased can cross to the second life easily. So they were trying to get the benefit of the pyramid. That's why they used the pyramid to bury their dead relatives. So that is my opinion. Symbolism and the truth are the two sides of one coin for me.
Yeah. How deep have you gone into sacred geometry? Have you studied any of that stuff at all?
Recently, I'm doing this. Okay. I didn't study that, but I can tell you I was able to recognize so many things. But it is very difficult to study many things.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there's so much you could do it all. There's mystery schools. There's just so much you could delve into.
I can tell you learning hieroglyphics itself is a long, big subject. Okay. But I'm doing this because many, many things, if not everything from ancient Egypt, is based on sacred geometry. So I'm working on this in the recent days.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is also interesting. I mean, Muhammad, look, you clearly know your stuff, and I love that you're open to learning new perspectives, and you're not, 100% sold on others, and you're teaching people things that are opening their minds. My mind's opening up. You are an Egyptian. Okay, I believe you now. I believe you. Let me see. I guess in all of this, I'm curious, what if there is something that people out there that think they know Egypt or they're curious about Egypt or, they've read certain myths they watch. Maybe they watch a lot of Ancient Aliens and they're all talking about aliens building the pyramids and all this stuff. Based on your research, based on the tours you've done, based on what you've seen, based on who you've talked to, what do you think are a few of the key takeaways that you wish people really understood about ancient Egypt?
Unfortunately, there are so many people now are trying to take claim so many things about ancient Egypt. And I see this as a big reason for some other people to become very skeptic, okay? Because the market now is full of so many things. Some are true and some are not true. And unfortunately, media now and some channels, they promote the other people, the people who are not saying the truth about anything.
Yes.
Okay? That's why I do have a dream to have a kind of an academy in the near future. I believe it will be, of course, it will be virtual academy in the beginning, but my dream is to make it real academy, to teach people at least the basics, at least the most important things to know or to be able to know if they are listening to good research, good information about ancient Egypt or no. Because there are some people can take or they can present 10% of the truth, but surrounded with 90% of fake stories. Okay. But what I need to tell you that I'm not concerned about this 100% because I know, and as I told you earlier, we are now in the new cycle of light. So sooner or later, people will understand the truth. They will know that there are people, some people are telling them their opinions, their what they believe based on good analysis and observations, and the other people who are trying just to become famous or to take advantage of what is going on. Many people told me that, Muhammad, you made a mistake when you wrote your book. I said, what? They told me in many parts of the book, you said, I believe my own opinion. I said, no, that is not a mystique. That is a way to tell the people, this is my own observation. This is my own feeling. Because I don't want people to think I present these ideas as facts. I believe it is facts from the bottom of my heart. I believe in it 100%. But this is what I'm trying to tell you. I want people to have the chance and to think about it, not just receiving. No, I want them to receive and to analyze this information. But I feel very happy, and I because I believe that people are doing this. It is not, yes, the media, as you said, and the internet is helping this. But yes, it's full of some crap. But I believe people are learning by time, and they will understand what is fake and what is true.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good that is a good thing to leave us on. Muhammad Ibrahim, I mean, I'm definitely, you've definitely made me want to investigate more about Egypt. Hey, wait a minute. What about this idea? I mean, tell me this. Is the Giza pyramid potentially a death ray?
Potentially what?
I mean, there's this Joseph Farrell wrote these books about the Giza Death Star. Very speculative. I mean, I've heard that the pyramids are they were a weapon. I've heard that the pyramids were a water pump. I've heard that the pyramids are protecting the gravitational pull of the Earth. And if you were to lift up the pyramids, you know, the magma and the lava from the Earth would start spilling out, and we wouldn't have gravity. I mean, do you think there's anything there to those theories, or you think it's all you don't believe it?
As I told you, there are some are true, some are true in the beginning of the idea and then false, and some are completely false. Okay, I will give you a good example. The water pump, as an example. No, the pyramid is not a water pump, but there was a mechanism inside the pyramid using the water, okay, for a kind of activation. So as if there was a separate water pump inside the pyramid, but not the pyramid itself. Okay. But people were explaining this story in a wrong way.
Yeah. Just people, yeah, people are taking advantage of, you know, I mean, it's cool to like Egypt. Same with the cats. I mean, is there, you know, is there anything before we go? Are the cats all connected to ancient Egypt? Do you believe that there's any mystical or metaphysical properties in cats that we should be paying attention to? Or is that just a cultural myth?
Okay. Yes, the cat was very important in ancient Egypt. I will teach you something very interesting. The ancient Egyptians understood that the cat is a being, can do two things. Can sense the changes of the magnetism field, especially the electromagnetic field. Electromagnetic field in most of the cases is not okay for human body, okay? So cats are not feeling okay with this field. But for us, we can handle the feeling, but it is harmful for a long term. But cats, they don't like to stay in this field. That's why if the cat is avoiding a place, you must do the same thing. You avoid the same place, okay? Number two, cats can see. That is my own opinion also, based on Egyptian writings. They can feel negative energies, okay? So sometimes they, as if they see a ghost. It's not a ghost. It is negative energies. So the energy of the cat, by the way, they produce very positive energies, cats. So they fix these negative energies. So when you have a cat or two, as if you live in an environment of positive energy. That's why cats are lazy, by the way. They are not active because they drain their power, changing the negative energy to positive energy.
Whoa, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that one before. Yeah, okay. Okay, this is good. You've given me some more little last minute nuggets to think about. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited for I hope you work on this documentary. I'm excited about Stargates. Right now, though, if you want to get in on it, I mean, it came out in November, this book. A lot of positive reviews for this. Egypt Before the Written History, The Lost Knowledge of Ancient Egypt. And if you want to take a tour with Mohammed, you can find out all about that at sabatours.com, sabatours.com. Wow. You know what? Look, do you think you'll ever get bored of Egypt?
No, at all.
You'll stay there.
Yeah, no, not only this, but I do tours all the time. I visit the same sites all the time. Every time is my first time.
Wow. Is that just a way of consciousness that you – do you discover things, or is that just the way you view the world? You look for something new each time, or is there just something new each time? I mean, some people would get bored by that. How do you do – how are you not getting bored?
As I told you, it is my passion. And yes, as you said, every time I go to find something new, and I find many, many things every time. So every time is a new adventure for me.
Amazing. Well, that is something to leave people with. I'm starting to implement that in my life too. Where can I find something new in even the routine things I do? And I'm sure Egypt just provides plenty of opportunities to discover more because it's filled with so much, so many mysteries and so many interesting sightings. So thank you for giving us a window into that today, Mohammed. Mohammed Ibrahim, this has been fantastic. Really looking forward to staying connected with you and learning more about Egypt as you continue to share these secrets with us all.
You are very welcome. And we may meet in the near future.
Mohammed Ibrahim. Sounds like a pharaoh, doesn't he? Such a nice guy. Such an interesting guy. You know, I can't wait for next year's Super Bowl. Because I'm going to throw my ring in and start running Osiris Gets Us ads. Just wait. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. I want to thank you because it's the day after Valentine's Day, and we may have not seen each other, but you know that love was still there. I'll talk to you soon.